King Wabi, happy Saturday. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Good afternoon. What are you seeing in the markets?
I am a little euphoria, right?
Yeah, man. What are you holding?
Same thing I've been holding for a while. Bitcoin, Link, Ox. I'm not as cool as you, remember? I'm not going to even...
are you talking about Chainlink?
Yeah. Is this the crypto space again?
Yeah, we're here to talk about all things markets and yeah, looking forward to connecting with you all.
All right, fantastic.
I see we're also joined by the Thor Chain PR department. I'm guessing this is Chad Barriford behind the Thor Chain PR department. How are you, sir? What are you seeing in the markets?
Hello there, gentlemen. It's the ThorChain PR department over here. I'm calling in from the ThorChain headquarters, and I've just come up because I'd noticed Coach Bruce is doing a lot of great work around ThorChain and promoting the Darun token at the moment, so I wanted to hop in and to see how everybody was getting on. Is anybody buying the Darun token?
Coach Bruce.
Are you buying the Darun token?
Coach Bruce, good afternoon. How are you? What are you seeing in the markets?
Is that Ran Nuna?
No, it's not me. No, cool. Are you guys buying the Darun token anytime soon? You going to go to Binance and you can just search for RUNE and you can purchase the Darun token using your USDC or your USDT. You know, all the stable coins pairs are on Binance right now. You can just go and help to bring the price up. How are you doing, Coach? You're right.
I am just giving myself a lobotomy.
You're masturbating, aren't you?
Just putting the ice pick into my nose and about to push. And
okay, well, hold on. Wait, hang on. Before you do that, let me ask you a question. Would you like to answer a question?
I can answer two or three.
Okay. How will you take care of your children if you're lobotomized?
I don't think there's any evidence that it diminishes your ability to care for children. It blunts your effect. It blunts your emotionality. But I think the main risk is probably death. Do you know the history of lobotomies? It's really weird and fascinating.
Not really, other than it's Victorian sort of thing, right? So they were just ice picking people's brains like crazy people. Like, oh, you're crazy. I know the fix. Remove a bit of the brain. Which bit is it? Is the amygdala the bit they remove? Or what do they take out?
They basically put an ice pick through the connections between the two hemispheres.
Oh, I see. That's pretty fucked up.
Amygdala is like the brainstem at the back. It's something quite different.
I thought it was at the this front.
This is typically done, often through the nose or even the eye, I think. They just hammer it. And sever the connections, which is kind of interesting and odd. One sec, just gonna get a drink.
Is this what we're doing to Chad Barriford next? I'm here late, so I'm kind of catching up.
Yeah, I did a South African accent and pretend to be someone else for 2 seconds, and then I gave up straight away because I have very little willpower.
I was thinking, is this 0x years? How did you get the Thor chain? How did you do that? Are you working with ThorChain? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, I'm the official ThorChain PR.
Yeah, it's official, clearly. He has the mark of the beast right there.
It's really hard to do. It's very exclusive. I'm just eating some cheese.
Yeah, So I remember a rune, and I heard it sounded really, really good. Can you tell me more about runes so I can?
You can only get that logo if it's been bestowed upon you. Like, mm-hmm. It's like a knight.
Official.
Yeah, it's very official.
I remember them talking about rune, and I was in my sauna, and I was listening to them, and it just sounded like everything that we needed. Like, or not we, but like, just it sounded like everything that made sense what Bitcoin and all that. It's just like, it made so much sense. And like,
hold on.
Something about like 3P.
Yeah, let me just get the official. Okay, so here's the official pitch.
Is your life savings in it? That's the question, Robin.
That's where we get to.
Well, okay.
So the official pitch is, so everybody knows the only way to swap Bitcoin for stuff is to do it on a centralized exchange. You can't swap Bitcoin like natively anywhere. So what would it take to get rid of centralized exchanges? What it would take is a series of deeply complicated interconnected bridges, which all connect from every blockchain in a really confusing way into one new blockchain called Thorchain. And what you can do is you can bridge your tokens from other blockchains and then swap a synthetic version of that token, and then you can send it to another blockchain. And so what it does is it creates this massive superhighway to basically get around swapping tokens on centralized exchanges. And in doing so, it creates this crazy volatile sort of like high velocity DeFi sort of Ponzi mechanics, which let, you know, if you go to $100, like if this doesn't get exploited or hacked again, it'll just go to $100. But you've got to remember, if it gets hacked again, it'll just go straight to zero and explode. That's the Thorchain official pitch.
It's like a vertical roller coaster that can run out of track at any time.
Ears can be put in jail at any point, right? So you're always, you need to wake up in the middle of the night, maybe like 3 a.m., 4 a.m., something like that. Check your bags, make sure it hasn't gone to zero. That's the only problem with Thorchain.
That's funny, because wasn't that the same guy that talked about Ox and saying, oh, there's like some legal stuff that you'd have to figure out?
Oh, no. Ox has no legal problems.
Who?
Well, I think the guy from Thorchain said that. He's like, he was talking to you. He was talking to, or maybe it was Armani. I think it was Armani, actually. Chris Armani.
Armani Code.
He was talking to Coach about that.
Like the, like similar to Gucci and Louis Vuitton and stuff.
Yeah, the Armani guy.
is his real name Armani? Or was I just making that up?
Giorgio.
Chris Armani.
I thought you meant, okay. Yeah, no, he's the CEO of TFL, right?
In the bathrooms in English nightclubs, there are always guys selling fragrances, and they always have rhymes like no Armani, no Punani. And Punani is like pussy, obviously.
No spray, no lay.
No spray, no lay, no jupe, no hoop. I quite like that. What else is there? No splash, no gash.
Yeah, yes, no splash, no gash. That was the best one.
Yeah,
no spray, no lay, no spray, no lay. You know, like feeling hot,
yeah.
And you'd be like, fuck off, leave me alone. I really need a piss. I'm going to be sick.
I never used to buy the aftershave or cologne or whatever, but I would buy the shake. Like, it's, I think they, at my old university, they do $1 and they'll shake your penis for you, which was always convenient when you're drunk.
So this is happening. All of this lingo and all of these perfumes and whatnot, this is all in the like confines of the UK bathrooms at the nightclubs.
Yes, true.
I'm having a hard time following the conversation.
For real. No, yeah. This is true.
You gotta clarify like what's happening here. Like, you walk up to the bathroom, what am I looking at?
In every nightclub or bar that's popular in their bathroom in the UK, there's always, in like nightclub settings, from like, I don't know, 9 p.m. to 3 a.m. or whatever, there's always a guy in the bathroom with a whole stash of aftershave, like Gucci, Armani, Tommy Hilfiger, whatever.
He has the aftershave,
and he has usually chewing gum and condoms and maybe lollipops or something.
And he's going to spray this at you, or he's like trying to sell you this shit. Like, what's going on?
He stands there and does like rhymes. He's like, hey, brother, no spray, no lay. No Armani, no Punani. He says this all the time. What else he say? There are fucking loads of them. There's like 100 of them.
I just haven't been to a nightclub. And it's like a standard.
It's to the point where you remember these because they're like common.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If it rhymes, it must be true. I mean, that's how it goes.
I don't know what the deal is, but they must like every single like night. There's a lot of chain nightclubs and they must like have it in every single one of them. And even independent ones as well. But like, yeah, there's a dude. It's like a shop in the toilets. And it's like if you're drunk and you're like, shit. Like, I can't get anywhere with the ladies, you know.
No Calvin Klein, no sexy time. That was
fun. Oh, my God.
So these guys have, like, a little suitcase or, like, a little shelf. They have these things
They take over the whole, like, unit. Like, they got the whole counter, and they just, like, cover it in all their crap. And, like, you know, they'll offer to, like, dry your hands as well. And, like, and you'll be like...
So where you go to wash your hands, these guys are, like, have all their wear and they're selling you this shit.
I'm trying to remember them. There were some fucking stupid ones as well. Like, it was, like, no Davidoff, no Get It Off. Some shit.
The TLDR is, like, if you're really, really drunk and you're like, shit, why am I not getting any women? Do I smell bad? Is it that? This is what they sort of, like...
It's like you need this, brother. You need this. Your fucking breath, your smell.
Yeah, you're awful. Like smell your breath. Like it's just like it's disaster. Like you need something. Like here's how you're gonna get the ladies, and then you give them a fiver. You know, for a couple of sprays.
Have you ever bought some?
Yeah, I did it once or twice.
Everyone has. And they also they're selling like a pack of chewing gum has like 10 pieces. They'll sell fucking one piece for like a dollar.
Oh. So like, okay, so your breath might not be so hot. So you're like, oh, I better get a piece of gum to get that girl over there I saw.
Yeah. At the college I'm still at, they always stand very close to the urinals. I don't know what you call them in America. You know where you stand and piss or something?
Urinals.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Oh, you call them urinals. Yeah, we call them
urinals. They stand right there. Okay, urinal. Okay.
I've never heard that in my life. What are you talking about? You just made that up.
But they always used to stand like right next to it and just like look at your penis and stuff. So you'd feel double insecure. Like imagine a guy, like a huge black guy or something, looking at your penis for a minute. And then when you walk past him, he's like, no spray, no lay, brother. You're going to fucking
spray some David off on me and let me go. And then you're like, he's got you like by the balls right there. You got to pay him the $5 and keep making fun of your dang.
The longer he stares at you, the more insecure you feel. And you don't want to piss. And you're just standing there for like 5 minutes. He's staring, you know, and you're like, please stop staring so I can do my wee. And he's like, mm-mm. And, you know, and the longer it goes on, the more you want to give him money so that he'll just go away.
They do a shake service as well. They'll shake, you know, at the end of a pee when you're likely to like dribble and stuff. And if you're drunk, you're especially.
Is there a fee for that, or is that like are they going to do that for like just
no like a dollar
normal concierge type of thing?
It's just a dollar.
They give you a bit of tissue paper, or they'll just there's just sort of shake it.
Yeah, let's be specific. Then, they put a piece of paper on their hands, and then they grab your dick and just shake it off. But it's because people are so drunk they fucking like spill down themselves. Sometimes.
Hey, Thorchain PR department, is that Rand Yuner?
No, mate, this is my very good friend. He's called Alex Ears. He's just with me right now. So my name is Ren, but he's my good friend. He's Alex Ears. Hang on, I'll hand the mic back over to him. So yeah, so the bloke in the bathroom shakes your penis for a dollar. That's basically the long and winded.
Zero X Ears, you know who you sound like when you do that? You know that movie District 9?
That's who I'm trying to Vickers. Popcorn, Vickers. Little popcorn.
Yeah, you
set all the little eggs on fire and they pop like popcorn. I'm just channeling that character. I just assume that everybody sounds like him.
That is 100%. That's really good.
Thank you.
There's no blockchain equivalent to this guy in the bathroom. Like if we imagined a blockchain as a nightclub, what would the equivalent of that bathroom guy be?
I mean, like that guy sounds like he provides more utility than most blockchains.
He's great. Like, I really think those guys are great. They're genuinely quite funny a lot of the time and quite useful. Like, if you have stinky breath, which most guys do at some point in the night, they're genuinely useful. And most guys get really drunk and sweaty as well. It'd be great if there was something equivalent for maybe Thorchain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, let's discuss how we can improve Thorchain. What does it need to succeed?
There's a few things we're working on here at the Thorchain PR department. So the first thing is a professional website. So everybody knows that any blockchain worth its salt has a professional website?
To me, it's fucking crazy that ThorChain doesn't still have a website, despite such a large blockchain.
I could imagine if it was like the year like 2000, right? Like you have a blockchain or something, you don't have a website. But today, to not have a website seems a little bit of an oversight to me. Maybe sheer incompetence.
Look, I'll say two words, Seffi. Professional representation. You need a website. You need a LinkedIn. You need brand status. And you need that to facilitate people treating you as a credible entity. We have no professional representation.
When you joined the ThorChain whatever department, like, did they give you like a business card that you can hand out to people or something?
Yeah, I do have a box of business cards now. It just has
or maybe like stickers. You can put them on the back windshield of your car or something. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Whenever I go to like a pub, you know, I walk around, I have a little suitcase, like a wheel around sort of thing. And I go around and I say, hey, I'm from ThorChain. Are you interested in blockchain? And I hand them like a little informational DVD and a business card.
Did they make you get a tattoo?
Not yet. I hope I don't need to get a tattoo. That's quite a lot. It's quite a lot.
Because the thing is, like, I don't think you can get to $100 rune without people putting on tattoos.
Yeah, we'll need to get Mike Novogratz again. Remember him, that guy.
Yeah.
We need to get that guy to do another tattoo. This time it will be the ThorChain tattoo.
Yeah, maybe this time have them do it like $140, not $100. So you can.
There's no reason why we don't see $150 ThorChain. That's what I've been saying. Unless it goes to zero instantly. It's one or the other. 50-50 coin toss.
Let me ask you this, is what are the five factors of getting ThorChain to $150? What do you think is required?
Well, let me list out the ones I can remember. We'll see if we get all five.
We've covered one.
The website. So that's the first thing. The second thing is you need a professional marketing and PR team and also a business development team. So all the best projects, all the best layer ones and DeFi protocols and whatever, they all have strong business development teams who go out and they spend all their time reaching out to build partnerships. So for example, we could get ThorChain to partner with Namco Bandai, right? We could have a ThorChain themed arcade game and we could do a partnership poster. Imagine this, a partnership poster. ThorChain in Japanese now has a arcade game with Namco Bandai and it's using one of their IPs. That's what we could achieve with a business development team.
That's a fresh idea, but you know, maybe even more innovative would be a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Have you considered that? Has the PR department considered it?
So what about partnering with us at Because Bitcoin? We can have Chad Barriford talking macro Monday through Friday.
No, Chad Barriford doesn't talk about macro.
Yeah, Barriford doesn't care about macro at all.
He does. He was on the show yesterday.
No, he told me specifically that he doesn't talk macro.
He spoke macro yesterday. Just ask Coach Bruce.
He's going to play Radiohead for us later on when he joins this space.
I think Chad had one macro post. He was looking to get a comparison of that Luna graph. And I mean, quite honestly, I think that's all we really need, right? Is a Doquan. And ThorChain goes to, I think, $1,000. And then we go down to zero again.
Yeah, $1,000 would be FUD at that point.
Do you want to talk a little bit? I know, Coach Bruce, that you've got some insight into what Chad is doing behind the scenes and sort of committing to the project. It's quite a lot. It's quite, it's sort of inspiring, really, like what he's putting on the line, like, you know, his children, everything. So I don't know if you want to share a little bit about that, or should we let him explain in his own words when he joins later on after his Radiohead?
He promised me the cover. But mainly he's been committing his time. And we only have a limited amount of time on this planet. I think the average life expectancy now as a male in the USA is around 76 years. And given that he's a vegan, I think his life expectancy is probably around 60 years. So for him to contribute upwards of 2 hours every day, day in, day out for the last 3 years is huge in my opinion. It is a big
thing. Is that why he has man boobs, like those little, you know, it's like a soy thing or something.
Yeah, that's what happens when you have too much, what's that thing they eat? Tofu. When you have prolactin.
You start producing milk. The phytoestrogens in prolactin increase the amount of, the phytoestrogens in tofu, which is a soy compound, increase the amount of prolactin, and that circulates around your body. And yes, it grows your breast tissue.
Yeah, he's going to get surgery to have them removed. They're pretty big. It's actually really, really like incredible, like the size of these growths, right?
You think that's why he doesn't go to the conferences and stuff?
Well, that's why he doesn't go swimming at the conferences.
No, he said he doesn't go to the conferences because he considers the base of the conference population to be nihilistic and atheist rather than humanist.
No, but the real reason is he doesn't want to go swimming with everybody because he's very self-conscious about the size of his nipples. That's the real reason.
Because I have huge nipples from my finasteride usage and ears you do from your SARMs usage.
Yeah, exactly.
You have nipples here.
Yeah, the tissue definitely is more substantial than it was before I started my first cycle of LGD4033.
Mm. What I do is I try and get really fat, and then I can tell myself that it's just natural deposits of fat tissue that will go away when I'm thinner. And it's not, in fact, any kind of abnormal prolactin-induced growth.
Yeah, I feel really seen right now. Sefi, do you ever perform that surgery to remove the tissue from under the nipple?
You know who's had that surgery 3 times?
Oh, yeah, I do, actually. You told me.
Well, not that particular procedure, but you know the one where, so there is a method, like, so if you have to reduce your man boobs, you can actually attach electrodes. Have you used alligator clips before? Either for like an electronics project or maybe to like smoke some weed or something. Yeah. So you can use those alligator clips and just like, you know, pinch them on and then attach something along the lines of a car battery, a 9-volt, and just basically shock them into submission. This is one of the utilities of, they make a blockchain for this too. You should look it up. It's on TikTok. Yeah.
So you cook the fat.
I think it just retracts them with like the muscle bits or something.
You poach it. You can roll it around as well.
Have you ever sang a song while you're performing surgery? Maybe like Inspector Gadget, you know, you're performing a surgery and you're just like, Inspector Gadget.
Whistle. Yeah, whistle while you work, right?
Yeah. What's your favorite song to sing while you're performing surgery?
I'm going to pass on this question.
All right. I don't recall.
No, but yeah. No with Vito. No with Vito.
No with Vito. We've got quite the crowd here today.
Steffi, do you have a bag of rune?
Uh-huh. It's still sitting there from last season.
How big is your bag of rune?
I don't think I want to tell everybody how huge that bag is. All right. Here.
I have a bag of rune.
Is it gigantic?
The thing I sent yesterday plus like another, I don't know, about double that. Is it bigger or smaller than my bag?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Right. I saw the percentage gain you were making. I don't remember what the amount was.
I'm going to buy some rune. That's what I'm going to do. But wait, has it run up like nonstop, like vertical sort of green candles? Am I exit liquidity?
Yeah, where are we now? Let's see.
I don't even know.
This is the rune day. Okay. What is it? Like 338? Is that where we're at now?
Oh, wow.
Something like that.
That's pretty good.
So imagine it's $3.38. We don't even have a professional website. We don't have a BD team. We don't have any of the prerequisites to really make a project, you know, pop. So like imagine when we see that first partnership poster land, like the partnership with Nintendo. Mario is now green and Luigi is red because Thorchain is important to us.
Yeah, I think another 5x from here would be good, right?
I think that's more than possible. Because I think one thing to notice with the Thorchain team is they don't fucking know how to shill. The only guy who knows how to shill is really the TCB guy, Thorchain Maximalist or Thorchain Bull or whatever the fuck his name is. What I noticed as well yesterday is like when you try to look for stats, they are burning around 500,000 a day, 500,000 a day, right? And people still celebrate to this day the Lunk burns. But in reality, you know how much was burned of Lunk in the last month, Sefi? About $50,000, right? Like, that's it. As in, 1,500 a day. But Thorchain is burning 10x that every day right now, right? Through the lending stuff and whatever else.
That's a huge burn.
That is a huge burn. And it's probably only exceeded by maybe Rollbit during the peak days, but pretty much nothing else. I noticed that they don't even have a fucking dimwit dashboard. So I'm going to try and make one in the next few days. What they need is a very simple website, which has like a big furnace graphic or something. And it just tells the burn every day, like X, you know, 500K burn today, 450K burn today. And then I can repost it or something. What they have, Familiar Cow and the rest of the dorks have made like a Nine Realms dashboard. And it has about 50 fucking stats and they all suck.
Oh,
like
weird APIs idiots.
And things. But they don't have a dimwit dashboard. So I've noticed for now, like there's a huge fucking burn and it's great, like tokenomics and pumponomics wise, but they have no ability to communicate that information to dimwits. And as soon as they do, as soon as they start posting the burns and as soon as they start posting the APYs and stuff, I think it's really going to take off.
Yeah, it seems like the user interface is like just unentertaining for most of these things and needs to have all this easy.
All you really need is like, maybe three of the stats turned into a dimwit dashboard. I don't know what to call it. Maybe I'll call it dimwit dashboard.
Yeah, make it like Thorchain, like make it like a Viking or like Norse at least. Like, I don't know.
You know what I was going to try and do is I was going to try and like from the past, I know a bit of HTML and PHP and CSS and stuff. But what I was going to try and do with this stuff is create a dashboard website using entirely ChatGPT. Coding.
Sure, why not? That sounds good.
And see if I can remember a little bit of HTML stuff and whatever else, and not that I need it, because there's obviously like you know, all these like automated makers and June analytics and whatever the fuck else, but it would be curious to try and do the entire thing as a normie through ChatGPT.
Yeah, you just need an API for how many tokens got burnt and that's it.
That's easy because Thor Infobot literally posts that like every day. So all you have to do is break the tweets, put that into like a chart or something, and you're done.
What you know, like what each of these sites needs is like you hop onto the site and there's some sort of incentive every day for showing up. You come, you look at your little thing burning, maybe you push some buttons on the site. And maybe you do some transactions on your wallet and that keeps you coming back. Maybe you get higher yield or some other bullshit. But like, there needs to be this carrot that brings people back over and over every single day to play this game.
There's something about the crow of Odin that's very attractive to me. I think I would like to get crows. I would like to see more crows every time I revisit the website. So like maybe 5 crows every time you reload the page and then the number would increase. And at some point, you reach a critical mass of Odin's sort of crows, and Odin comes and he gives you an airdrop.
Well, I find it interesting. We have Thorchain has a lot of these DEX partners, or I guess like wallet partners, right?
Hold on. I noticed that you said we, as if to imply you are Thorchain.
Sorry,
I'm the only official Thorchain account in this Twitter space.
I retract that we, And I mean, I don't have the ring around me, so I have no affiliation to Thorchain apart from a leverage long I took, and a couple liquidity pools. Really, all they need to do is just go to these wallets or someone, right? Really, just needs to go to these wallets and be like, well, can you just put the logo on whenever you do a swap from Bitcoin to ETH? And then, like that right there, will just drive huge traffic, right? Like Trust Wallet has what was that, like 10 million or 100 million addresses? So, I mean, there's your visibility.
I think it's one of those things where they have all this like retard enthusiasm fuel, and they haven't converted it into retard terms yet. And as soon as they do, it's like going to be huge and prolific. It's like, it's for now, it's really only the like the Cosmos nerds and natural usage and fundamental stuff, right? It hasn't really had a huge speculative multiplier yet. I think the speculative multiplier is something like 3, which is really low.
Oh, that was genius. One thing I'll say on that, Coach, is like they've got this idea there's like an intrinsic like value, like there's like a floor. Yeah. Like, that's really cool. The only problem is that like it's really low.
I thought that was sort of like, it sort of makes it seem like it's worth less.
Yeah, it needs to be higher. Otherwise, exactly, it's like, oh, it feels risky. You know, well, like, oh, it feels like we're a little overextended.
My two thoughts about that were like, if you have a multiplier, then yeah, it obviously makes the thing it's multiplying seem really low, rather than like, it makes you think like Thorchain or Rune isn't worth $3. It's actually worth $1. And yes, people are merely speculating, right? And that's not good. The other thing I wondered is if they claim some kind of intrinsic value, could that open themselves to risk at all?
I'm not sure, but I did ask the question about 3 years ago, what happens if the speculative value goes below the intrinsic value? And they said, no, that can't happen. It's impossible. And I went, all right. Mm. So,
heard that before.
Yeah, I don't know.
Where have we heard that before? Yeah, it depends on how many shorts are available out there, right? Like, that's the only thing.
Yeah, well, if it blows up, it will just go straight to zero. I think we're all on the same page there. But yeah, they should definitely like come up with a way to rationalize, like, because it could be whatever they want, right? I mean, you know, let's just make higher.
It's sort of used in both ways though, because they're also like, in the last market, the speculative multiplier was 10. Therefore, it should bounce back to 10.
Yes. Oh, that's a good chart. Well, actually, even that's probably too complicated for the idiots. It's literally just like, how many dollars of tokens got burnt today, this week, this month?
I honestly think the burn thing is like huge.
There's nothing else that matters.
Just the burn rate. I've been posting shit like, this is what it looks like when founders love their community. They're willing to burn. They're, you know, Chad Barraford and the Thorchain team, they love their community. They care deeply mm-hmm. for their community. So they're willing to burn 500K a day. However,
he lives paycheck to paycheck. He just
If the main influencers in the Lung community loved and cared for their community as much as Chad does for Rune, then they would be willing to burn the same amount.
Well, if you think about it, Thorchain has a huge advantage over Lung because it has a founder who's not in prison.
Is that the narrative? We put Thorchain against Lung and say it's better?
No. Listen, Lung people love the burn and they love loyalty. And the point is simply that if the people who are mainly involved in the Lung community now loved and were loyal and cared for and truly cared about nurturing and nourishing their community, they would surely burn at least $500,000 a day. But no, they only burn $1,000 a day. Think about that multiplier, by the way. It's like 500x per rune, which is insane.
Oh, yeah, you could say there should be a correlation, right? It's like
we can have a rune Lung multiplier and then love like output, 500x the love.
Yeah. And you can have like a versus, you know, like Chad Barraford on one side with his arms folded.
Why are you signing up to an abusive relationship? Why are you signing up to support people who aren't willing to burn? Like, why would you not support a man who is willing to burn?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I'm down. I think this makes complete sense. Okay.
About the reason all the Lung people are here, right? It's because of my, like, initially I was burning my own money. Like, I don't know if most of you know the backstory, but with the Lung thing, I started a validator and I started burning like most of, or almost 100%, like beyond costs of the yield on that validator. And it was like I think it was more than that. It was like, I don't know, $5,000 every time or something. And I did it for ages and that brought about 100,000 people, right? So, and then other people started doing it. And it was also kind of silly because relative to the total supply of Lung, it was just tiny. Right, I'd burn like a couple thousand every time, and the total market cap for a point was like,
it was like advertising expenses at that point.
but it had a profound effect of like being infectious enthusiasm, right? And it was, for me, it was always considered to be the first stage, right? It's like you create a burn narrative, you create a comeback narrative, you create like a sort of a vision of, we have all these factors in place, but we need a few more. Obviously, like the validator network and everything else was online, and it had a fat community, had like a fat Oracle rewards pool to pay the validators and stuff. And then you start the burn stuff, and then down the line, you hopefully convert that attention into like genuine development and stuff. Never happened. But either way, the first few stages were really fucking successful. Simply talking about the burn and like the starting that narrative really strongly. But with Rune, you have something that's literally 100 times or more as much, which is really interesting, through a genuine use case rather than just some guy burning his own money.
Correct. ThoughtChain has utility. The actual is very clear. Like, it's very, there's actually a reason for it to exist.
Like Lunk had no utility and is trying to find it. But ThoughtChain has utility already.
Mm-hmm. Here's the story, right?
Yeah, the list of things that are not simply just like, you know, vying for block space or whatever, or trying to like survive on like some sort of transaction fees or some bullshit. That list of coins and whatever is pretty short. You can like probably list them, you know, on a couple of hands.
Go on then, do it.
Do I have to?
Yeah, you're making the big claims and brags, and you're saying that you have two hands. So fucking back yourself up.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, all right. So you have, you have a Bitcoin store of value.
Stop hesitating.
You have a Chainlink Oracle system. You have Rune, which is an exchange where the token's function is to secure the value that is on the network. Not just the function of the network, but the value of the value locked on the network. What else do we have? We have like things like Akash, who is like you pay for cloud services and like decentralized cloud things. Similarly, that's the same story with what's the other one? Flex? Not Flex. What's the other one? I'm losing Lunk? My mind. No, not Lunk. Lunk doesn't have any functions.
Are you thinking of Render?
Oh, yeah. Well, Render is, yeah, paying for GPU. And then there's the other one that's not Flux. Render. Flux, not Flex. Flux, similar function to Akash. Their system works. So you pay for their shit with the Flux token. So there are some, but like the number of chains that are just simply like just one more blockchain or whatever. there's just a lot of those. Actual so-called utility or real-world applications and whatnot are pretty sparse. There are others, I'm sure, like if you sit around waiting. Like, you could argue that maybe NFTs have a utility in the sense that, like, you can have a art marketplace. But the thing is, like, a lot of that art is not necessarily parked on that chain. The data itself is somewhere else on a file server, right? So it's not...
Profile pictures are so 2022, like, man.
It's a token and it represents my picture. And you're like, how come I can't copy paste it? Well, you can copy paste it. Well, then what do you mean? Like, so who owns it then? I don't know. So that whole thing is okay, but like it's at least there's a digital marketplace for the thing. But you know, it's not exactly mind-bendingly important just from like an art perspective, unless the art was actually stored on chain. And even then, the problem is, like, even if it was, the art literally was on chain. The problem is that doesn't keep someone from copy pasting it. So
this is all art to me. I think. Like, it's like, oh, what's art? It's this Twitter space. This is art as well. That's what I say. Store this
Speaking
on the blockchain.
Of, art. Does anyone remember those ThoughtChain NFTs that they released?
Little chibi things.
Yeah,
those
guys.
This was also a thing I was thinking of, by the way. Like, okay, you need for retards, I mean, for retard maximization, which is basically how you get something to the next level off the technical base. I mean, you need both, obviously. So you need the retard metrics and the retard burn and everything else in the dashboard and stuff, but you also probably need the cultivation of more tribal identity with time, right? And there's the circles, which is pretty good because you can put anything inside them, and I like that. But other than that, there needs a bit more cultivation of like the tribal war paint, but maybe that's what you're talking about.
And then there's like the series of coins and whatnot that are credible stores of value that you can lend off of, use as collateral. And that would be things that, you know, really just anything with a sufficiently large market cap that, you know, probably can't go to zero is going to like fit that bill.
I don't know.
So that would be like, at this point, that would be your Bitcoin, your Ethereum, your...
No, Atom doesn't count.
So it's
your Atom. Yeah, we'll add Atom to that list. It's fine. See, that's the thing. It works. That's the beauty of it. So like, as long as it works and no one fucks it up,
not only is it dead, it's full of horrible conversations and debate and the ICF bullshit, but also they're going to reduce the yield to 5%.
Yeah, they don't have a situation where the it's obvious that the dimwits know what they're doing with it either. And so, yeah, the yield thing, I'm against changing that. It doesn't make sense. Like,
I'm for coins. 2 or 5%.
Wait, everyone. Yeah. Somebody tried to join the conversation. I heard a new voice.
Sorry, yeah, that was me. I was just about to say, speaking of art and retard maximization, how about a AI generated Valkyrie that gets progressively hotter the more rune is burnt?
Also, it starts as Caroline Ellison and then turns into Sethi's.
So it's just linked to the API of the burn bot, whatever it is, on Twitter. And the more rune that gets burnt, the more smoking hot this Valkyrie gets. And, you know, maybe she gets more naked as well.
And okay.
A bit of for the UK residents here, a bit of page 3 sun for Thorchain.
That's actually not a bad shout.
I was wondering about
your hired.
What about like a there are rune burns that are happening as a result of just the normal protocol and the lending and stuff. What if you created an NFT set, which is like you get an NFT if you do a tribute burn, like the top 1,000 tributes or something. You know, like in Lunk, you have the biggest burners, right? People who just burn for zero reason, like me or something. There's a list of them. What if the allocation of the set was determined by tribute to the rune gods or whatever, or to Chad?
I think that could work.
For the naked Valkyries, I'm not gonna lie.
Well, I was thinking of like weird dynamics where if you make a bigger tribute, then you displace someone and you take the ownership of their NFT.
I like leaderboards. Leaderboards are good. They like drive like people to like try and rug each other and harm each other and like compete and argue and stuff, which is great. I think we, you know, porque no los dos is what I always say. We can have a leaderboard and we can also have women as well.
You want a leaderboard where you just click a button and it will tweet out the thing in the leaderboard you're trying to show, like maybe a, you know, your little graph or a burn mechanism or whatever the fuck. Like, oh, look, we had 300 rune burn today. And you just click a button and it like, it actually has an image that fits right into a tweet and it goes right into the thing. And like, this kind of stuff is like really lacking in.
Oh, I like that idea. How about it has the burn threshold for a certain day has to reach a certain amount for the Valkyrie to be a certain level of hotness.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, the thing has to be shareable by anybody, not just like you have somebody, one person tweeting it or something. These things have to go really viral and you have to have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, like AI generated.
Wait a minute. Yeah, Kareem has shared in the nest that ThorSwap are doing a burn thing and they're tweeting about it with flames, multiple flames, which is very good. Wow, thank you for sharing.
Great.
I had a question.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Does Thor actually need to even be client or like public facing if you have DEXs like ThorSwap or wallets that integrate with ThorChain natively and then it just runs in the background and the burn of rune happens without anyone even knowing?
I want people to pump my rune back.
Even if you have only one rune burn, you want to have a million people hear about it. It's the other way around. Like, nobody gives a shit how much is actually being burned. It's the mimetic effect that matters.
I want people to buy the rune token. So I want people to think rune's going up. That's why I want more pumper mentals and Ponzi stuff on the timeline for the Rune token specifically.
But isn't the tokenomics of Rune, like, doesn't the value of Rune go up as it gets burned because of the validators? Or am I missing something?
You're going to need to explain that to an Indonesian rice farmer, and it won't be possible. You're going to have to explain that. It's much easier to just say token burn number go up.
No, no, no. Easier to say that the Chad loves his community.
I do find it
interesting how many like people are in the crypto space, and you think, well, getting a wallet's complicated, or maybe checking these websites or whatever is complicated, and maybe your seed phrase is complicated, but like the number of absolute complete imbeciles who are in crypto is quite amazing. And so you can't make these things complicated for them. You can't have hidden mechanisms, whatever. Everything has to be a Ponzi mimetic effect thing that like just freaks everyone out, and like they want to spread the word and, you know, tell their retard friends or whatever it is to, you know, buy the thing. This is just how this works. And if you don't have that, your like project could be amazing. It could like fucking cure cancer. You could put like, you know, monkeys on the moon and all that. Like you could do all these things, but like, you know, nobody knows about it and it just sits there. Nothing happens.
I wish Chad was here because I think, and I'm kind of ignorant. Like, I don't remember. Like, I probably read the Rune white paper, the tokenomics like 3 years ago, and I just never sold my bag. But I'm pretty sure to be like a validator on the Thorchain network, you have to put up collateral that's like 3x the amount of Rune, which drives the price of Rune up. I don't know what it is, but I thought we don't need rice farmers. That's what I don't
know. No, you definitely do. Yeah. It's really important. So like that idea that like, you know, buying and locking up tokens, remember it's the buying of the tokens to lock them up. That's important. But then you need more people to buy the token. We need as many people to buy the token as possible. So like, yes, those people, but not just the validators, like the node runners. Who like bond a million rune or whatever, right? We also need to then drive retail people to go and buy a ton and distribute to as many people around the world as possible.
So what price are we dumping at then?
I'm going to say publicly a number, and then it'll be up to you to decide if you believe me and whether you. I might sell it a little bit before, a little bit after. I might never sell. I might stake my rune.
That's a lot of qualifying statements. What have you found honesty lately, Ears?
Not now.
I'm
Thorchain
PR Nomad department. Bridge hacks all the way to the Thorchain PR department coordinator president.
It's a beautiful.
You've full come circle. A long way. It's yeah. quite the like arc, right?
From draining bridges to building yeah. them.
You sell Rune when people are paying off their loans, and if the price difference between whatever collateral they put up in Rune happens to be. Like a lot higher than it was when they first opened the loan, since that would trigger a minting of Rune, which would increase the supply, so the burn narrative would go away.
Oh yeah, wow. They're doing a Ponzi lending thing. I'd forgotten. Sorry, Thorchain PR.
That's the first legit strategy I've heard in like. That's the first legit strategy I've heard in like 6 months from anybody around here.
Okay. That this has reminded me of that whole thing. Okay. Okay.
That's why I'm in a leverage long.
Yeah. That thing is gonna. Yeah, that's spicy. It's basically like the same kind of burn mint stuff as Terra, like except to put a cap on it.
I think like Bruce is right about. I think, you know, Coach Bruce, the whole idea of love from Chad, and you know that he loves his community so much. Like I think it's the truth, right? Is when you have that much strength and love in a token, well, it's never gonna happen. You're going to have it spiral to infinity. So that's really what's going to happen, right? But you sell it when people start paying off their loans.
Yeah, the thing the retards need to understand is that Chad has zero obligation to burn anything. He could take all of that money himself, and he could buy out half of Indonesia and half of lots of other small Asian and South American countries. He could go build a huge empire of property. He could buy 1,000 Steinway pianos. He could do all these things, but instead he chooses to burn purely out of love. You know, burning is optional. Yeah. He does it anyway.
I think the retard dashboard is critical, because this, here's the thing, like, all right, you have all sorts of interesting utility things like privacy tokens, and you have like, you know, like, so Thorchain's example is like, you've got this DEX that if you happen to have Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever, you can swap on there, right? But like, the reality is that most people don't realize why they want to bother with this thing. They just want to use their centralized exchange. Maybe they like use leverage on KuCoin or whatever else. And like, most people don't really know what the hell this whole thing is all about, nor do they care necessarily. Like, oh, Rune's a cool name, I'll buy that token. So bringing in like a retard energy to the, like, gamify the token itself and have fun, even if it's not done by the main, like, you know, the main Rune community or whatever you call it, like, it's, I think it'd be super productive, because you have to have some kind of like automated PR for the thing, and have like this game where people want to come keep playing. Because most people don't really get like, oh, I can, you know, I don't have to go to Coinbase to swap my Bitcoin to dollars or whatever. Like, they just don't care about Thorchain. Like, realistically, they don't. So right now, the good thing is, like, most of Thorchain's users are most likely hardcore, hardcore crypto nerds and hardcore folks. So like, that does create a nice bottom for the coin. So like, the price discovery to the bottom is good, in that like, all the diamond hands are there, and they're going to eventually buy up the Rune token. On the other hand, the upside is constrained, because you don't have enough retard energy on to push it. And I think that's the concern I have. Like, if it was like a crazy wild bull market and there's just cash everywhere, it'd be one thing. But like, it to attract crypto money from other projects to Rune, I think you have to have some gaming going on, like some entertainment.
Out of interest, is what was your approximate arbitrary price targets?
Sorry, you never said a number. Said a number, though.
Give me a minute.
I've just been trying to change my profile, because you just reminded me about the burn mint stuff, and I was like, oh shit, I need to have nothing to do with this. It's going to go to zero at some point.
The most natural one would be its all time high, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess you want to start taking some profits there, but you hold your moon back, man. You know, like, this thing, like, at least be up. Like, don't round trip for sure. Like, at least, like, so, like, take a little something off the table.
So there's a couple of like little ranges where I think it's like sort of an obvious trade. Let me pull this up real quick. I kind of lost my screen here.
I missed that. We're talking about Rune.
Yeah, Rune. So, okay. So if you kind of look at where the previous top was at about $21, and then a bottom at around 75 cents. So if you kind of just, like, you know, do little fib extensions on this log scale, I think I showed that to you, Bruce, like the little chart there. If this is simply like...
Can you show us all and post it as well?
Oh yeah, let me post it. Give me a second. That makes it easier for everyone to see. Give me just a second. Carry on for a minute while I do this.
Like a lecture with no slides.
Yeah, exactly. Let me put this up here. Okay.
Yeah, but I'm glad you're finally making guarantees of price action.
Yeah, and why not? I don't care. Okay, here we go. Let's just call it Rune Chart or some bullshit, and then, like, let me just post it in here. Okay. So, like, for starters, there are... Did it show up? Yeah, probably. Okay, there we go. So you should be able to see it in a second. So the way these high volatility charts work is, like, whatever the low for the prior season was, and then like the pump that happened from that would be considered for Rune like its first cycle. When did Rune start, guys? Anyone know? What was the year?
2019. Yeah. It was
Does that chart I have actually have the entire price history of it? Or
no.
Let me see. CoinMarketCap has the low at like,
I think, Binance a penny or some shit. Standing one.
But yeah, but okay. It was fairly nothing for a long time, I think.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say like the bottom is probably like a dime or something like that originally. So the first sort of like cyclical move for this thing was like...
No. Wait, don't talk in Americanisms. What the fuck is a dime?
Oh, 10 cents.
No, a dime is the type of chocolate that comes from...
a coin that's
IKEA.
Like...
No, it's crunchy. It's got little crunchy things in it. Diamond.
Yeah, yeah. So 10 cents or so, like, or below. And so zero to like around $22 was the first sort of run up. So that's kind of like a first cycle move and whatever. And so from there, like, Rune dumped quite a lot. Like, it went all the way from 22 all the way back down to like under a dollar. Now, that's a pretty extreme dump, but like well over, what is that? Like, what's the percentage move there? Here? Is that 70, I mean, 99% or close?
About 96 or something.
Yeah. 96%. It's getting kind of that level. So that's a pretty typical thing. Like, Ethereum's done that and whatever. Like, it's not unusual for that kind of speculative craziness. And that's because, like, a lot of people that, like, founders or whoever else that had Rune at the bottom are going to, you know, sell at the top and clear their thing out. Maybe they'll buy back lower. Anyway, so you have kind of like this very volatile kind of setup here. So from 21.28 down to like 77 cents or so. So all you really do when you create these little fib extensions is you draw a line that goes from the $21 thing to the 77 cents, and then the Fibonacci extensions just get drawn out for you, like in the little rainbow that you see there. So, so interesting places to buy these things usually are close to their prior low. So, you know, under a dollar was a good spot. Like, you didn't know it was going to go there, but like under a dollar at that point is a pretty good spot because you're still only like, you're about 100x from the very bottom. Like, if you say a penny was the bottom, 1 cent, and then, you know, 77 cents is actually a 77x from that still. It's still a you know, pretty big pump from the very, very bottom, but not a bad spot to pick it up. And so from there, it starts going up, right? So now we're at like $3 and something, I think $3.40. And you see these little, the little rainbow lines going up. And so you only bother with these log scale charts on coins that, or assets that move on logarithmic scale. That's why, like, stocks and things, like, you know, like, you don't go do this for like an IBM stock or something. It's not going to move in these exponential moves. You're not going to get like 2x's and 3x's and 10x's on those type of things. So on the log scale here, like, you'll notice that there's these big moves, you know, like one level will be 275, the next will be $4, $6, $10, just wild moves. And that's just common because these are like, the situation is that there's low liquidity overall. And it doesn't take that much to move the price, especially when you have leverage trading available out there. Like, Bruce, how much is KuCoin's leverage trading now? Is it like they let you do 5x or 10x or what? Like, what's
that? I think there's like a risk limit. So if you're doing 10, you can do like 20x, but I think if you do 20x, you have to do a lower amount or something.
Lower amount. And they might be like, you have to have more collateral, or maybe you have to pay more fees or whatever. So there's a point after which it doesn't make sense. But anyway, the leverage essentially pushes these prices into wild, like, volatility, because people go and buy these things on leverage. So, like, if you look at this chart, like, where would I consider selling had I bought, you know, so if I buy under a dollar, I think my cost basis is like $2 or some shit. I don't remember what it was. It's been sitting around for so long, I don't even remember anymore.
One quick question, Steffi, just on, because I don't know about trading. I make it sometimes. But with the, like, in mathematics, with the typical Fibonacci sequence, it's the... Mm-hmm. The sum of the previous two numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, whatever.
If
you look at this chart, then sometimes it, like, look at the chart on the left, right? It goes 10, 21, 52. Now 52 is more than double 21, but then it goes 83. And that is less than double 52. So what's going on with those numbers? Why is it not the Fibonacci sequence?
Why is it? I mean, then why isn't the Fibonacci ratio that's shown there?
Like, why? Yeah. Well, why isn't it? I suppose over time it trends towards a constant ratio, but like sometimes it's going more, sometimes less. Like,
I think it's because, so the way that TradingView does this, like, the Fibonacci scale technically is a linear scale thing, but the chart is on a log scale, and I think that, I don't know why, but it, like.
No, because we were talking about price.
I've changed my profile to a trader. I was going to be called Trader QT. Here, let me step in for a moment here. So, so when you're looking at trading, right, it's like baking a cake. So you need to combine, you need to have different ingredients, the coinciding variables. You know, just so you want to have better than a coin flip chance.
Stop.
I want to know this. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Generally, you want to know it, like, because it's not following the regular Fibonacci sequence, right? Sometimes, like, look at the left of the chart. 10 to 21 is more than double, and that makes no sense. And then it suddenly goes 52 to 83, which is like a reduction. It's doing weird reductions. And then it goes 184 to 582, which is like a triple.
Right.
So it's going in some seemingly random order, right?
Let me pull up the actual program and see if I can find what it's doing.
What I suspect is you've given us a scam chart to make us buy. And use it.
That's reasonable.
Well, you know, what I like to actually say, but it's probably a lot more better to go based off of order flow, right? And, you know, download a software like Bookmap and just check it on the day-to-day. And see what are there more bids than there are sells, right? If there's more bids than sells, you know it's going to go up. So, but I mean, even better than that is that Thorchain itself acts as its own market maker for its own token by putting up everyone else's LPs as collateral, essentially, right? So, what I've been doing actually is just kind of looking at my LP position, and if you see that your rune side is cheaper or it's less than your other asset side, well, then the order, that means that Thorchain is a net buyer of rune. And you have to think, if it's even like, say, like a 2% delta on that, that's like tens of millions of dollars that are going to flow out of exchanges.
That's a bit more of you're just going by the fundamentals of how the tokenomics and the leverage and whatever else work, and like have a strategy. This is a little bit different. This is just like general like fib sequences. So I pulled it up, Bruce. Like, hold up. Let me. Oh dang it! When I close this,
Rune did 58.
I think like the best, like your best metric, though, even if you're using fibs, right, is still just wait until you see that Thorchain has an oversupply.
This is what I've been saying. It's so about coinciding variables. It's like baking a cake. Yeah. So okay, when you're baking a cake, you need to have historical levels from history. You need to look at the trend in the volume. You need to look at the trend in the different indicators. Like, you can look at the Fibonacci levels and shit as well, and you can start to see critical supports and resistances, right? And that's when you go and you make risk adjusted bets, and you don't want it to be better than a coin flip chance. There's no such thing, of course, in trading as anything like certainty. The other thing I would say is that I think $59 million of volume got done on Binance, Rune, whatever the pair is there. I suspect that's way more than what happens on Thorchain by a long way. So I would say that what happens on Thorchain is almost immaterial to the price of Rune.
Thorchain was 200 million in a day. So actually,
what?
No. Yeah.
Like $200 million of volume.
Yeah.
In the last 24 hours.
I think it was today. Thorchain Bull put out a tweet on it.
Fuck me in the asshole.
That's literally how much this thing is pulling out.
Back to the way these fib numbers work, Bruce. So what you do is where you start the so the top, the previous top is basically considered one, and retracement is at 0.786, 0.618, 0.5, 0.382, 0.236, and zero. That's where those lines get drawn. So these are the ratios that that it's pulling up. And on the log scale, it's a little bit different because it adjusts slightly because the otherwise the so the visual thing doesn't look as like well divided on the log scale, because you're just the visualization of log scale is just different, right? So that's why it looks like that. And then you have extensions, which is above one. So if you go past the previous price, the initial extension is 1.618, 2.618, 3.618, 4.236 and onward. So there's kind of like these these aren't even in order. It's 1.272, 1.414. So there's these kind of like levels that will, you know, get extended based on the sequence. And the theory is not anything particularly fancy. It's more like a mixture of like, does human psychology, does it fit with these Fibonacci sort of behaviors? And then subsequently, like, do traders act upon these behaviors? And then it creates a self-fulfilling prophecy. That's really all it is. There's nothing really like magical in that sense. Like, you could do, like, you know how you've done grid bots? You could just divide the range up by 10%. you know, like 10% increments and do the same thing and, you know, get some approximations. So the idea is just to kind of give a quick visual representation of where I might want to sell or where I might want to buy. It has nothing to do with like, you're definitely going to hit it or like it predicts the future or some other bullshit like that. It just doesn't do any of that stuff. It's purely like expectation management. The way I think of it is like, we don't think on log scales on most of the things we do in life. Like we don't go to the, you know, McDonald's and expect our cheeseburger to be 100x, you know, more expensive. And so we don't like, we don't visualize these kinds of numbers. This is why like, people oftentimes underestimate how high something can go relative to where the price is that moment. Like, remember when I did that flex chart? Remember that one? I was like, Jesus Christ, like the thing might go completely berserk with low liquidity and look at how this FIB levels look. And it was like, we were all kind of like just looking at it in disbelief, like, oh, it can't possibly happen. But how high did flex go, Bruce? Like, what was the, we bought it at like 30 cents or some shit, like, and it went to like 70.
It went to like just over 8.
Yeah. So like, that's the kind of behavior, but like, you wouldn't expect that based on looking at some, you know, looking at, you know, someone's going to be like, oh, wait, how in the world, why would you expect it to go up that much? These things just do this, and it's like happens over and over again.
That's a little bit different. It's a bad example because you're talking about billionaires who can pump it out of ego.
Well, sure, like, yeah, but whatever the reason might be, it doesn't make that much difference. The point is, like, people will sell if they see a certain multiple increase. So the higher you go above, like, either break even, so called resistance, which would be like break even on like the top, or anything above that, like, you know, if you get a 2x, a 3x, a 5x, a 10x, the higher you go, the greater the proportion of sellers will emerge, because there comes a point after which it's absurd to hold it beyond, you know, a certain level, unless you're just a hodler or whatever, right? So there comes a point where, and this is why, like, you'll see these things top out at some point. There's some point the sellers overwhelm the buyers, and that's just how it goes. So in the case of this rune chart, like, if I had to guess, like, okay, where would be good places to place a bet? I would say in this case, sub $1 was a great place. Is it a good bet right now? Well, if you think that, you know, Bitcoin halving is coming next year and, like, you know, all the hype is going to increase and whatever, it's a very small relative market cap coin. It could easily move quite a lot. And when new Bitcoin and Ethereum users show up, some of them are going to use Thorchain. Maybe the burn narrative takes off, or maybe more coins get burned, whatever the reasons why. You can reasonably expect this to kind of go back to prior all-time high at some point. It's not unreasonable at all, especially because it's a smaller market cap thing. It's not like Bitcoin where it's like, oh, you got to wait for the macroeconomics and whatever the hell else to kind of fix itself. These things can go just because, like, the narrative returns. So, you know, from here, which is like $3 to 21 bucks, you're still talking about a pretty good 7x. Now, here's the other thing. Like, what happens if it goes back to the prior top? Is it worth it at that point? That's another question. Usually, if a chain is showing better metrics, more users, and more TVL and everything else, you have every reasonable reason to believe it would actually exceed its prior top. And then you have the FIB extensions drawn in there. And that's when it gets really interesting. So, you know, Rune is early enough where, like, if you wanted a moon bag of this thing, like, it's not unreasonable to hold it to like the $52 level, $83 level, and truly like $100 level type numbers. You know, because especially if you don't have that much of it and you're just holding a spot, you don't have any fees to pay or whatever, like, you know, you could just simply let it ride too. That's the other option. Because if something like this exceeds prior high, it sends a message, or even if it gets to prior high, it sends a message to most of the crypto world that, hey, this thing is legit. People actually want this thing, right? So the chart, besides the fact that there's like this, you know, Fibonacci nonsense, there's also the message that the chart sends to future buyers, right? Imagine, like, you know how many times you see like this U-shaped recovery where, you know, it's like people are like, oh, it's going to break out from previous levels, whatever, and then all of a sudden it just flies, because that's when everyone decides, oh, look, I'm going to go take on leverage and buy some there. And what usually happens is those leverage traders right at the breakout oftentimes will, they'll oftentimes sell within like a 10% gain. Why do they do that? Because like, there's, everyone knows that people are going to put leverage trades in at the breakout. So therefore, people will counter trade that by selling into that. And then when the price drops, it'll drop below, Like, so let's say Rune goes to $22. Like, it's very likely to drop even before it takes off beyond $22. It's highly likely to drop 10% or even 20% because all of the stop losses are going to get hit on the way down. You know, so like you wind up with this like situation where a lot of volatility happens usually at the prior highs. And that's a great place to sort of like make easy money, relatively speaking. Like, because if it so all you have to do is set an alarm for yourself, set an alarm that says, okay, if it hits $22, I'm not even gonna look at Rune for the next whatever. And if it gets there, then I'm going to start playing around. Some people do that. Like a lot of people do that with Bitcoin, for example. I did that when BTC went back to 20K. I bought a whole bunch at 20,000. You're like, wait, why are you stupid? Why are you doing that? You already bought it at 3,000. Why do you need more at 20? It's because once I know that it can get back to that level, then I can just go berserk and then just like buy a ton of it. Because the odds that you're going to go back down, well, number one, you know by that point that the likelihood of Bitcoin going to zero was pretty low. Or like if Rune goes back to its prior high, you feel like the odds of it going to zero at that point is lower. And the odds of a continuation or pump past that high is pretty good. And so that's where all the trading activity comes. And so you'll notice this, like Link did this. Like, so remember when I said, oh, I'm buying Link like last October and I bought it like at like $7 or whatever it is. And I bought some more at $6 and this and that. So why did I do that? Like, you know, I figured, you know, the FTX crash happened, it's wrecked. And I'll just add on the way down and buy some. Remember that? Like, and then it, all year, just up and down, up and down, up and down. And it just wouldn't break past, like, what is it, $8 or something. And like when, you know, you saw that happen, like, and people, you saw noticing people start posting charts everywhere, fucking YouTube channels open up, like everyone's ready to pump their bags because like a year and a half has gone by why they've had a chance to accumulate. So now every Chainlink nerd in the universe is now like primed to pump the coin. So you like, it helps to have like, a bunch of people accumulate for a year or 2 years, and that produces a new set of pumpers that are going to just go nuts on social media. Like that's the whole thing. So if it hasn't died during the bear market and those users are like slowly accumulating and like a floor happens, then you get like, so a lot of that happens from spot buying. And then at the breakout, you get the leverage traders start jumping in. Because they didn't want to like spend time accumulating. They didn't want to buy spot and leave their shit sitting there for like a whole year. So I don't leverage because I'd rather just not lose my coins. So, and I don't want to pay fees. And I don't want to pay all the other like whatever. So I tend not to do that. I just buy on the way down personally and just escalate larger and larger on the way down. And then I don't lose anything. And like if it goes up, yay. And if it doesn't, you know, like I'm already buying close to the bottoms anyway. So like even if it goes down some, so what? So that's kind of my theory behind it. But the leverage traders will be the ones that we're going to pump my bags. Like, so like if people come in, I'm going to 100x leverage Chainlink or whatever. And like people start have, and then usually the hardcore leverage trader will show up like after the thing's gone up, like maybe 2/3 of the way up back to prior high. So prior high for Chainlink as an example is like 53. So let's say like you get to about 35-ish. If you make it to like 2/3 of the way up, most people at that point are expecting the thing to moon. And so they're going to expect a break of prior high. And then people start kind of piling in already. And so all those people are going to be the one that take it to 100. And then, you know, maybe there's some leverage trading in between and whatever, and that adds some volatility. So on the way up on a parabolic move, you usually have something like 5 to 7. So usually if a parabolic move happens over a longer time, like let's say 2 years, it's usually better than if it were to happen over, say, 6 months. And the reason is because you get more and more people involved and new people have a new expectation of their ROI. So like if I buy Chainlink today, like $12 or Rune today at $3, then like my expectation is, oh, I'm going to get a 10x on this thing. And so the new buyers actually have like reset the expectation of how high it's going to go. They don't fucking know how high it's going to go. They just show up, they buy the thing and they're like, oh, I'm going to get a 10x in crypto. So they buy this thing. And on the way up, usually you'll have these like these spikes where maybe for a few months it'll run up. Maybe these things will, you know, like pull back like 40-50%, and then you'll see them run up again and 40-50% drop, and then it'll keep doing that all the way to wherever the next level is. So for Rune, it might be like, let's say $80 or $100, whatever that number is on those extensions. And you'll see this happen, and then you'll shake out a lot of people as each dip happens, because 40% is a lot. Like, imagine you threw $100,000 in and you're down to like 60K. You're like, oh no, like, you know, you're hurting. And so, but that's the place where people start buying the dips and stuff. And it goes up and heads on over. But like, usually these parabolic moves, like if you look back at Bitcoin, Ethereum, whatever, there's usually about 7 to 8 drops, about 40% drops on the way to the very top. And on the way up, a lot of people are just going to get shaken out. So like, if you look at Chainlink as a perfect example, like a year and a half of just going sideways, like anyone that's held for a year and a half is not fucking selling now. Get out of here. Like, they're not selling till at least the all-time high again if they have spot bags. There's no reason to. They've already waited long enough. It's just idiotic to sell that soon. So then the leverage traders might come in. They might come in like, oh, I'm going to buy it at $8 and it went to 12 and I sold it. So I saw people talk about that. And that's reasonable. If you made like a 50% gain on leverage, you know, like, what the hell? Just get out. That's fine. Yeah, this is kind of the behavior that you see. So I would say, like, that since Bitcoin halving is like March, I would say like the next 2 years to 3 years would be like whatever bullish cycle that's going to be. Maybe it takes even longer because like it's slower to pick up steam because the economy is shit or whatever. So maybe it's like a 4 year like extended thing. And usually when BTC hits up against its like Fibonacci resistance, which is where it is now at 37K or whatever, I mean, yeah, like around 37K is where that is, then the altcoins tend to start going berserk. Why? Because like, let's say you buy BTC today. Let's say maybe it goes back to prior high somehow. Like, you haven't made that much money, really. Like, you're not, like, you're doing okay. But let's say maybe you got a 2x or something. But like, if you're getting a 20x or 50x or something on Rune or some other small coin, like, obviously that's the more obvious like bet. Because if you assume that BTC will go up, you're going to make the assumption that everything will go up eventually. So the speculative bet is going to usually be in the altcoins, not in the big high market cap shit. So that's kind of the general strategy. So I think this is a good time. Like, if you're paying attention now, it makes a lot of sense because we're just starting to break out in the altcoin stuff. Like, even Ruin's barely moved. This is nothing. Like I know it seems like a big deal. Oh, I bought it under a dollar and now it's like $3 or whatever. That's really nothing in the crypto space.
Well, all of that. So a lot of people have been saying to me at a conference this week, hey, it's time. It's time. And what they point to is all the projects launching. They've chosen now. It's like the timing is good. Like, Celestia launched, like Pith is doing their airdrop. Like, all these projects kind of kicking off and launching now is because they've all decided unanimously that this is the right time to launch their shit, because it's on. It's time to pack the bags. That's basically the consensus among the builders. I've been in Amsterdam for the last week talking to people at Breakpoint, and they're all saying the same thing, which makes me bearish, because when the consensus is price go up, it sometimes means price go down. But
yeah, that could be good though. Like, if you have in the next 6 months, you have one nice drop, then that's like it's going to be a fantastic time to just go nuts and get a whole lot more. So it depends on how much cash you have left over. Obviously. Wait,
Coach, I'm muted and I heard a woman screaming just for a split second.
Oh, it was me. Just me.
Oh, okay then.
I think Seffy, that was a really good explanation of trader psychology and applying it on fib levels. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, like, everyone knows these same tools. So the thing is, like, you know, like, people use like MACDs and this and that and the other thing, but like, everyone's looking at the same shit. So there is some self-fulfilling prophecy to it. And some people, and there's another thing too. If you're in a relatively sort of like overall bullish time, the upside tends to be higher, and those upsides tend to play out quicker or whatever. And if you're in a relatively sort of bearish time, which I think we sort of are, if you look at the overall economy and inflation or whatever, and how many, like, people can't afford like fucking lunch, and like, we're talking about them buying crypto and whatever. So in those type of times, I think the highs will be more muted. And that's why, like, if you look at Rune, like, if you wanted to be conservative about it, like, you know, where would you, you know, dump it if you were concerned about this? I'd say around $6, right? Like, at around $6. And let's say it keeps going up and it heads up above 10, you could consider getting it back higher, theoretically, if it really looks like it's going to go in a continuation run or something. But that's the other thing, too, in crypto. Like, the funny thing is, like, there's a bunch of stuff that haven't moved at all yet. So, like, a lot of people just cycle their shit. Like, if they've already had a good run up on something and they've made good money, they just go buy something else instead of trying to chase, like, the last little, you know, juice out of an orange that, you know, that you have to squeeze at the very end. So it depends on. So that's the thing about this market that's fun, is that, like, this is true in stocks, it's true in crypto, is, like, things are pumping one by one. So all you really have to do is go, wait a minute, what shit here hasn't pumped yet? And then go get more of that.
So I take profit and put in another, and that pump, and then I take pump profit out and cycle.
Yes, and then everything goes to zero when you buy something really bad.
speaking of pumps, boys, I got a jump to get a freaky arm pump at the gym.
Oh, let's go. Let's go, Rich Piana, 8-hour workout. Let's put 2 inches on those arms.
Remember, you get about 10x the effects of the workout if you take a heavy fucking dose of diabinol.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm on my winter bulk grind, freaky pumps.
How much? What are your big three? How much do you bench, deadlift, and squat?
Well, I just repped 225 for three, so maybe conservatively like 250 bench. Squat, I can probably hit 300 since I 3-4 rep 275. Deadlift is, I don't know. I'm scary to max that lift. Mm. Probably 350 conservatively, but
nice.
Yeah.
You lift a lot more than ThorChain PR department.
Yeah. Well, and you're not even taking caffeine.
I take L-citrulline, which it's the blood coursing through the veins. But yes, boys,
citrulline malate, and what's the one that makes your face tingle? I can't remember.
I don't know. But
alanine.
Yeah,
that's it. Beta alanine.
Mm-hmm.
Get a big scoop of that. Awesome. 300 milligrams of caffeine. Crush it. Do a deadlift PR today.
If you want an ultimate angle, it's probably niacin.
For caffeine, I just drink Cortados. I think we should have a space about why Cortados are superior. Equal parts milk, equal parts espresso.
Mm. And then we add an egg, put it in the oven, and it turns into a cake. Is that what you're trying to tell me? Make a cake.
I just don't have caffeine pills.
That's fine. Enjoy your arm workout. We won't keep you too long.
It's going to be...
Ears, you know that after I got back from France, I realized that most of the food I was eating sucked. So that's an interesting realization. And then the other thing is I stopped drinking milk and coffee and lattes and whatever.
Oh, interesting.
Steffi, what is your daily diet? Many people out there in crypto, including me, see you as some kind of disembodied head without a body.
Today I went to
Can I finish my description? People will see you as either some kind of computerized thing or a disembodied head in a box without a body or a digestive system.
And now they see me like that because you just said all that now.
Certainly nobody can imagine you digesting anything or walking around or doing any kind of exercise. And we can never imagine you in a boxing ring or something like that. So I would like to maybe explore your visceral, tangible side, like the flesh of your body and what you eat and what goes into it and stuff.
Yeah. So like lunch today, we went, I put the like top down in the car. The weather's beautiful here. It's like, you know, 60s or something. And headed off and like picked up some, there's like a little breakfast brunch type place. So I got myself like a eggs with a hollandaise sauce and like a brie cheese mushroom thing. And we had like a bit of a, what do you call it? Eggs Benedict and such. So that was lunch today. Does that seem reasonable? You don't like that?
I want to know like a day start to day end typical kind of thing.
Well, today I'm off, so I'm just standing around. I'm pacing while I'm talking to you guys so I can get some exercise in. So just I fidget a lot, maybe just walking around and stuff when I do things.
And what's your shoe size?
10.
Okay.
Is he talking American?
10 American, yes. Which is, I don't know what UK.
It's about 8.5, I think.
A European is like some bizarre thing, like add 40. I can never remember. I always get confused.
European 10. A UK 10 is a European 44. And I think that's like a 42 for America.
It's like a 41.
European 10 is like baby feet.
I don't know what European 10 is. A UK shoe size is like 1.5 or 2 above American. But it doesn't scale perfectly. Like it's more at the lower end and less at the higher end.
They just couldn't come up with some sort of a standard based on like the length of your foot in inches or centimeters, for example.
I don't understand because I thought the UK/American was supposed to be inches.
Yeah, but they just have different inches or something. They have
this agreement on the inches. It's like it doesn't include the toes or something.
Super weird. Never understood it. One of life's great frustrations and life's great mysteries. Okay. I think that's good.
Yeah, otherwise it's like shorts and t-shirt day today.
Really?
Ears, you're acting like a bedtime alarm just went off on your phone.
Yeah. I feel like a bedtime alarm went off. I got up at 6 this morning.
How did you get from the place to the place?
I took a train because...
Really? TGV?
Yeah, just zooms you across.
Oh, the Thalys.
300 kilometers an hour. You know. Right. Easy.
I was on that a few weeks ago.
Were you?
The Thalys train.
I did, yeah.
Nice. I like that train. Big fan.
The TGV wasn't bad, except for like the strikers and whatnot making the goddamn train stop all the time.
That's France.
What do they like, strike right on the tracks or some shit? I don't even know what's going on with that.
They put on yellow jackets. And then they go and they kidnap the train conductor's wife. And then they close the petrol stations and then they blockade the ports.
Did you go at the top or the bottom of the Thalys?
Top. Every time. Top. Never bottom. I'm not a bottom. I'm a top. Where did you go, coach?
I went at the bottom, but I had a suitcase. So.
You couldn't carry it up the stairs. It was too heavy.
It was too heavy for me. Because I'm not Kareem.
Kareem could have carried it up the stairs. Well, yeah, that was my day. I took the train.
Look at you awkwardly trying to wriggle out this space.
Yeah, just winding down.
Looking for a moment.
What time is that?
Trying to balance the enjoyment of your friend, the need to get out.
It's 11 p.m. So for an old man like me, that's extremely late. I'm a trader now. Try to stay up all night. I have a vibrating pillow. It wakes me up.
You're doing that thing you do again where you try and wriggle out.
You can do like the bull market 24/7, like checking your phone all the time shit or what again?
I'm going to get a vibrating pillow that wakes me up when I get margin calls and things like that.
Oh, when does your whoop strap arrive?
Should already be here. So
look on the delivery. Have you got a delivery? Up.
Yeah, it's the French Postal Service. They're pretty
Can't wait. I can't wait to compare HRVs.
Yeah, well, this is the only reason you've told me to order it, so you could take my chart and then go, look how good my chart is.
No. There's several reasons, actually. One is because I really like it, and it's not just for narcissism, but instead it's because it's probably one of the only things I've found that optimizes for health rather than for performance, which is actually a really good differentiation. Because if you think about something like, I don't know, like a Garmin tracker or a Polar tracker or something, these kind of things incentivize you or motivate you to do as much as fucking possible, right? You've got to run further. You've got to run harder. Your heartbeat's got to get higher. It's like you're trying to beat the machine and you're trying to get like better stats on running. And the running stats might look something like the amount you've run in distance and the time you've run, and you're trying to beat the PR all the time, right? But the interesting thing about Whoop is that rather than that, it's optimized for health and recovery. So rather than trying to beat the time in performance basis, you're trying to essentially get a higher HRV.
Manage your fatigue and things,
right? If you overtrain, or if you're too stressed, or if you have a bad diet, or if you don't do self-care stuff, like maybe meditate or whatever, your HRV will tank, because HRV is both a reflection of your fitness, but also a reflection of the balance of your nervous system, like how much into rest and digest versus fight and flight you are. So it's like, it's sort of a weird, interesting thing for me, because
what does HRV stand for again?
Heart rate variability. It's the variability in the beat-to-beat interval between heartbeats.
Sure, right? Okay.
Which is really fascinating, because there's a fuckload of correlation studies showing much, much better outcomes on basically every single metric based on this measure.
and you want more variability, not less.
It's not intuitive either, right? So if somebody is having, say, a heart attack or some kind of heart disturbance, typically the heart is very even, right? Like in a heart attack or something, it's almost metronomic. The beat-to-beat variability is very, very low. And as you get towards health and resilience and that kind of stuff, your beat-to-beat variability goes up. It gets much higher. The interesting thing about HRV is that it reflects a lot of different things. And one of the main things it reflects is basically your ability to adapt to stuff. So the level of stress resilience you have,
Is this like a modifiable thing, or is it just your nature?
No, you modified. I managed to double mine. And what that means is I did the underlying stuff that is reflected in HRV. Right. So I optimized my breathing and my cardiovascular fitness and whatever else. You can shift it. Every 10 milliseconds, your HRV goes up is predictive of a 20% less chance of dying from all causes. There's all kinds of interesting models with this stuff. Here's another interesting thing, for instance. When military recruits are tested before deployment, say in Afghanistan or Iraq or something, HRV highly determines whether they'll get PTSD or not. So the ones who have a lower HRV tend to be much more likely to get PTSD compared to higher ones. In terms of that stuff, it basically reflects your ability to tolerate stress and be resilient from it and recover from it. I sort of see it in this interesting poetic way, which is like the more chaos there is in your heart, then the more chaos you can handle in the world, right? So it's like an interesting reflection.
It's a mixture of like intrinsic components and then maybe some modifiable part that you can do something or something.
So generally, if you have a lower heart rate, a lower resting heart rate, meaning better aerobic fitness / genetics, then you would have a higher interbeat variability just by the fact that there's more time that passes for every heartbeat, right? Because it's slower. Some of that is genetic.
But there's also generally, like, if your resting heart rate is just simply slower, you live longer too, I think. So
yeah, that too. But I mean, that is also reflected in HRV, right? For two equal people, one who has like a genetically lower heart rate, the genetically lower one will have a higher HRV on average, because there's a greater length of time for every heartbeat and therefore more chance for variability.
Another interesting thing that came out recently, like last month or so, was there's like this AI sort of machine learning thing that they did to kind of look at your heart rate and your rhythm. And it was able to determine if you were going to get atrial fibrillation before you actually got it. It measured was not the existence of fibrillation, but like just changes in some of the nuances of the electrical signal that you can't see with the naked eye. It's almost like there's like this information stream that if you just have a cardiologist look at the EKG,
exactly,
like you wouldn't see anything specific, but like either some of the activity over time or maybe spacing of things. I don't think they actually know why it actually is able to detect it. That's the other funny thing. Like it's sensing some shit in the neural network, and it's like being able to predict.
That's fascinating. You realize like the scientific method is this sort of feedback loop between theory and observation, right? But then you realize the observation component is very limited and the ability to form like inferences or spot things at all or develop some theory about how you might predict things is very limited. And then you take all of this data that you have from whatever like ECG streams and stuff, and you plug it into AI learning model, and you can suddenly get way more out of it. when I first heard about the AI stuff, I thought like, how many new patterns are we going to find by plugging all of the data in, right? I think that same realization has been made with language, right? It's like we thought of language as this relatively complicated thing to construct, and like maybe that was informed by the process through which many of us learn language. We learn like these grammatical rules and we think it takes a fuckload of time to do it. But in fact, the base rules in the large language models make language seem a lot easier than we think it is, right? Like it has a surprising mastery of language, which we thought was somehow innately human or hard to map or something like that. But in fact, it's not. I wonder how many patterns there'll be found in all kinds of stuff. I suspect a lot.
You know how like you guys know how like a pin a basic photography where you put a hole in a box and you have the light come through and then you have the image portrayed at the back of the box and it's upside down and inverted, right? What's it called? A pinhole camera. And yeah. The brain works basically like that, right? Your occipital lobe of your brain is essentially that exact same thing. It's inverted and both vertically and horizontally. And so if you were to damage like a little piece of your occipital lobe of your brain, then that portion of your vision gets damaged. But in both eyes, because like your eyes are kind of working in unison. The stuff that I think Facebook posted a thing lately, their science people like did an imaging of the brain recently with, I think it was fMRI. And and someone posted this almost a year ago too, something similar, but like they did a similar thing where they put people under imaging and you get like a scatter plot of the brain activity of what's happening in the brain while you're looking at a picture of a giraffe or maybe a picture of an apple or something like that. And they were getting interestingly close as far as their ability to like sense what the apple looked like based on the scatter plot of electrical activity on the fMRI of just it's remarkable. And what that tells you is like, wait a minute, maybe the brain's not that complicated. So, like the conclusion to me was not that,
yeah,
oh wow, like how interesting is this? To me, the inference is, wait a minute, we know that like the occipital lobe works somehow, and it works sort of like a pinhole camera, because when you damage parts of the brain, it would like, it'd almost be like, imagine if you had a box with a pinhole camera, and you put a hole in the box where part of the image is supposed to be, land. Obviously, you're not going to have that part of the image there because that part of the box is broken. The same thing with your brain. But like, okay, I could get all that part. But, and somehow or another, your brain acts as like a pinhole camera. And like evolution has like seen fit to sort of create this occipital lobe with this interesting thing. But then like with, if you're able to get a scatter plot off of just a scan of your brain and deduct an image from it, what the fuck are we actually seeing exactly there? Like the brain must be actually relatively simple. And this AFib example and this, like, have you who seen, knows how much.
Have you seen the studies where they reconstruct the images from the brain signals? That's really interesting as well.
Yeah, that's exactly. That was the one that was like maybe 6 months to a year ago almost, right? That they were just like able to,
there's a bunch now.
Like this person was looking at a giraffe and the thing was able to interpret and show a picture of a giraffe through diffusion. The Facebook one wasn't trying to do that. It was trying to match pictures that it felt like were close, I think. It wasn't trying to, like, it's not like prompting an AI where it's like they're using the signal to prompt the AI to draw a giraffe. But the whole thing is just miraculous, like how either how simple it is or how complicated, depending on your view of the world here. But like the stuff that's about to come out is just magical. Like the weird outcomes are going to be like, imagine like how do you interrogate people now knowing this kind of stuff, right? Like, do you, like, all you have to do is like show them a picture of whatever it is you're trying to interrogate them about. And then like, you can see what kind of images they produce as a result. And probably that has some implication as far as like, did you do the crime or whatever?
Yeah, it's interesting.
So now it's like, if you want to credibly be sure that nobody knows that you're part of some scam crypto project or whatever, you really just have to make sure you never lay eyes on the founders ever. Right? Like you just kind of like, because they can weasel it out of you somehow by turning some screws in your brain and then like getting this information.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's all this creepy stuff. Like,
I'm speaking directly to you, Xerox ears.
Because, yeah. Like, I know people, they can use AI to like get your router. Like, so I don't know how this works exactly. Something about what are the waves that your router uses? It's not radio waves, whatever. However your router works, I've forgotten. They can actually then, the AI can use whatever data is being pulled back from the router or like to like spatially model your flat or like the room and like what you kind of vaguely look like and where you are and like what's going on inside your building, which is pretty fucking crazy.
Oh, basically just hearing the echoes in the
yeah, I don't know like how it works at all.
Type of thing.
Yeah, but
you
it's
know
like
another interesting one. There's this medical thing where like you just like have a conversation like we're having now. In fact, you could run it on our conversation that we're having now, and it will tell you like, okay, it'll divide up all the participants. It'll kind of like label them, and then it'll put together concepts like, well, yeah, 0x ears has a cheery disposition. You know, Bruce over here is, you know, depressed for some reason. Sephi over here is suicidal for some reason. And it will start like, based on the tone of your voice, the words that you're using, you know, maybe whatever, like you're able to start predicting like what the mental state of that person is too. Like that's going to be interesting to abuse.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Almost definitely. Surely going to be abused.
And what's even more interesting is I just dropped a link into the nest of, I was just scrolling. And I saw this thing. It was like, what is this product? And the product is that you can piss into this goose while you're in a hot tub. You don't have to get out the hot tub. You can piss into a one-way valve in this duck thing. And I thought that was a really weird product. And I don't know why it appeared on my feed, but I also thought it was quite clever. Because you know when you're in the jacuzzi, but you need to pee, but you're with people. You don't want to like pee on the people. So you just get this little duck. You piss into the duck.
Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ends dragging out the max amount of payments. Red down days got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken knives. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known the politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom over impossible loss. It's all moss and I'm liking the odds. Fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, yo, the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary falls. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of dinner lace stacked in non-toxic just to get a better place. Smacking on the hostage like this shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight and all these Maybellines, they call it implausible when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Beats tearing apart your community, all these low hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10 stargazing after the siege, commanding all
call the management to grab a few seats. And then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats. And if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the verbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works. And we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We raping under the earth, say and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Channel Spaces.